Bruce, thanks a lot for the invitation. It's really great to be here today, and I want to say that the work that you're going to see here is it's obviously not all mine. There are a lot of people involved. You probably can't read the list, but there are other scientists from the Forest Service, Michigan Tech, Indiana University, and a variety of other places that have been participating on this project. So, first off, we're switching a little bit from salt water. We went to freshwater, non-peatland forming systems. We're moving to peatlands now, and we're also moving, if you think about where the maps were for the previous talk, we're just on the right side of that map is where we're located, and the peat we got for this study was from eastern Minnesota, also just on the east side of that map. So peatlands start forming when it gets a little colder and wetter in general. Doesn't always have to be cold, but that's where the dominant peat systems are. One thing that's fascinating about peatlands is even though they make up only about 2.5% of the land area of the globe, they hold about 31.5% of the soil carbon globally. And that is because of the high carbon density of these systems, obviously, and that is rivaling atmospheric carbon. So it's a big pool of carbon, and it's a pool of carbon that's vulnerable to oxidation by both rapid processes, the fast burn of fires, which you're seeing here, these are fires in Indonesia. And the smoke there is, that's not clouds, that's smoke from the fires in Borneo and Sumatra. And there's also the slow burn of decomposition. Now, these pictures illustrate a dramatic point. The person on the left is a tall and man. He's over 2,000 years old. Looks like he just went to sleep. The conditions in peatlands are very favorable for an inhibition of decomposition as long as they are maintained. And then one of the most important thing is maintaining high water tables and anoxic conditions. The person on the right is only a few hundred years old, and he was also found in a peatland. He's not doing quite as well. And obviously that's what happens when the conditions are not quite right for inhibiting decomposition. So there's a range of things that can happen in peatlands that's a function of environmental parameters. When you have these reducing conditions, methane is very important flux outward. They tend to store carbon, so the net inward flux of CO2 and net outward flux of methane that can be significant. In contrast, when you increase oxygen, for example, in the system, you tend to potentially burn off carbon dioxide and reduce the amount of methane coming out of the system. What I'm going to focus on today for the talk is the methane part of this story, for in a particular study that we're doing in Michigan called Peat Cosm. Now, Peat Cosm is it's a climate change experiment, and I'll show you some pictures as we go along here. It's focusing on water table because water table is a really nice integrator of the climatic impacts that you see of both precipitation and temperature. So water table mediates the response of those two and is also very important in driving a lot of the oxidation reduction processes that we were talking about just in the previous slide. So if you think about the effects on fluxes, there's a couple of arrows here. We have the direct arrow of water table to the fluxes of gases and to carbon cycling in the ecosystem via changes in redox conditions. And then you also have indirect effects, which are changes in plant community. And in particular, in these northern acid peatlands, the sedges and ericaceae, the heat plants, are the dominant vascular plant functional groups. And so this study focuses in on these functional group effects and the effects of water table in interaction with each other on carbon cycling. So what Peat Cosm is a large mesocosm experiment with meter cubed field collected peatons, and I'll show you a quick picture of that in a minute. We're quantifying the impact of changes in hydrology and vascular plan functional groups on the carbon cycle, determine mechanistic underpinnings of these dynamics. So, for example, changes in hydrology, unique plant traits such as the ericoid fungal symbiosis or the parenchyma associated with sedges, which I'll touch on in a second, redox chemistry, enzymology, microbial communities, and above and below ground production and carbon mineralization. So we're looking at a lot of stuff, but I want to focus in right now on the methane side of the story. And so as we mentioned before, just to bring the point home here, when you drop water tables, such as you see here, you can actually see that color change that's part of the oxidation of the peat here, the darkening of the peat. And that darkening is a good indicator that something is happening, creating the quinones or other darker oxidized organics, as opposed to these reducing conditions down deep here, where you see much less oxidation. And this is Ericaceae on top here. This is not peat cosms, but these are some smaller mesocosms or microcosms that we have. So then, if you start adding the plant communities into the story, key feature of sedges that we keep in mind are A, that they're parenchymal, and this is a good illustration. I think we're dying out here on this, but if you look on the screen, you'll see those pores on the stem. Those are essentially, think of them sort of like straws. Most of your wetland scientists, you know about this. So that allows for transport of gases through the stem. And of course, one of the unintended consequences of that is that methane can flux out through the parenchyma. And so if they were just open straws without anything else going on, that would be the only thing that would ever happen because of them. However, they also are conduits for oxygen down, and that leads to increase in the redox potential of peat. And when you increase the redox potential, you actually tend to suppress methanogenesis. They also can't forget that roots don't just have, they're not just passive straws. They also have a variety of other things like exudates that can prime microbial activity. And that could potentially lead to increase in methanogenesis. And so, sedges are associated sometimes with increases and sometimes with decreases of methane flux because of these competing processes. This is a system we have showing oxygen profiles, and you can see this is the actual map of oxygen in 2D, showing the oxygen concentrations in in a vertical profile around sedge roots, and you can see these hot spots of oxygenation. And if you look at the bottom here, you can also see oxidation of the peat going on right here. So it's clear that these processes do occur. The question is, how important are the balance of these two? And we bring Ericaceae into the story. I personally am very interested in them because I do a lot of work with fungi, and they have a very interesting symbiosis, which is the ericoid mycorrhizal symbiosis, which is a highly enzymatically competent group of fungi that add functionality to the plants that they wouldn't otherwise have, allowing them to compete for nutrients such as nitrogen and phosphorus effectively with free-living saprotrophs. And for that reason, they could definitely have restructuring effects on microbial communities. Whether they have a stronger effect on methanogens or methanotrophs and the net effect of that, it's not entirely clear, but we do have that question mark there because we think that they will have an influence. They don't have a parenchyma, so any respiration they do will actually lower the redox potential. And they also potentially could prime processes such as methanogenesis. And then there are also, as I mentioned, the effects of water table directly on plants. In particular, the Ericaceae are thought to be more likely to be winners under lower water table conditions. So if you think about longer-term pathways towards effects on efflux, if the communities move towards Ericaceae, then we could expect to see changes in that direction. We have a lot of measurements. I'm not going to tell you about all of these. I'm just going to tell you about the ones for today's talk. We've been doing methane efflux work, looking at vertical gradients and concentration and 13C isotope natural abundance of methane, root biomass and plant by plant functional group, oxidation reduction potential, pore water acetate. Acetate is a substrate for methanogens, so it's a very important potential precursor. And then looking at microbial communities using Illumina tag sequencing of both rDNA and rRNA to get both the potential and the active communities involved in these processes. And I'm just going to talk about them in terms of lump methanogen and methanotrophs from those pools. And qPCR bacteria. So this is this is how we got our peat for the study. These are large peatons. We tried to find site locations that had equal balances of sedges and ericaceae and lawn topography, so they'd be controlling for those conditions. So we'd have a nice starting community. So we did this on 24 bins. We brought them back to Michigan from, this is from near Duluth, at a peat harvesting site for a commercial peat harvesting site, and put them in our facility. This is our mesocosm facility, which is the above ground view. They're open to the air. Below ground, we have a climate control tunnel, and we insulate them on the side so that the gradients of temperature gradients are vertical. Measure a whole bunch of stuff on them. You can see on the front there we have control of the water table. We have one face where we can actually look into them. The mesocosm treatments included ericaceae removal and sedge removal, or an unmanipulated treatment where we left them both together. So when you see sedge, that's the ericaceae removal. Ericaceae is the sedge removal, and unmanipulated still has both ericaceae and sedge in it. Water level manipulations, we're using Marcel as our guide. It's a nice long-term records from there. The black line in that figure on the bottom there, that's why I don't like touching this thing, is the long-term average, and a strong summer drought kind of condition is the red line. We tried to mimic those for our summer treatment, so it's not a fixed water table drawdown. It's more of a natural cycle of climatic impacts. We have both rainout shelters and draining for the natural to mimic natural spring drainage that would be hydrologically appropriate near the surface. During the summer, it was all manipulation was via rainout shelters or artificial rainwater using NADP. Data. So these are the examples. The 2012 year, not quite as strong of a drought that we generated there. The blue line is the high water treatment, and the red line is the low water treatment. You can see that our water tables in midsummer are about, in a high water table treatment, are around 10 to 15 centimeters. And then the low water table treatment, they varied from years to 30 centimeters or so at the bottom to as much as 45 to 50 centimeters in the low water table treatments. And 2014 was like 2013. And this is the kind of methane flux we saw in the system. I want to point out a couple of things here. So there's three different years here, the purple, blue, and green are all the high water table treatments. The orange, yellow, and red, the warm colors are all low water table treatments, so you can see much more methane flux out of the system at the high water table end of the spectrum. And that's not unexpected. What I also want to point out is we had a strong, significant plant community effect. The sedge plus ericaceae and ericaceae were the highest, and the sedge was lower, and that was significant clearly in the high water table treatments. And that was consistent from year to year. So we have a strong, consistent effect that we need to try to explain. So it looks like, if you look at this, it looks like having ericaceae present leads to higher flux in this system than sedge, even at the high water table, when the water tables are actually pretty near the surface. So we have about 10 centimeters or so of peat on top of the water table. So strong, significant effects, both plant community and water table. One thing to point out is in the top part of the peat that we were just talking about there is if you look at the ericaceae high treatment and the ericaceae low treatment, you'll see, and this is biomass of roots, the 0 to 10 and 10 to 20 centimeter depths are fully dominated by ericaceae. There's almost no sedge roots up in those top 20 centimeters, which means you have a zone where ericaceae are dominating process when they're present. And so that could be, it's part of the story to keep in mind when you think about trying to interpret the processes that are going on here. So that's one piece of the story. Remember, but the sedges, it doesn't show all the root biomass because there's root biomass deeper. Not much Ericaceae root biomass, but sedge root biomass certainly goes down towards the bottom of the bin. I'm just showing you about the top part of the soil there. If you look at redox potentials, we see that there's definitely a lower redox potential under Ericaceae than under sedges. Especially, you can see that more dramatically in that top part of the soil there. And we're approaching redox potentials that could be certainly with microsites be driving methanogenesis. Using methane isotopes, if you look at these figures, this is isotopic data on the x-axis, but it's a response variable to treatment and depth, because depth is the y-axis. The left hand means less oxidized methane, and the right means more oxidized. So if you see things moving to the right, it means they've been more oxidized. So we're looking at where the oxidation happens, and what we see is going from the 20, which is the 20 centimeter depth, to the emitted layer, you see a steeper slope to the right, which means more oxidation in the sedge treatments. Sorry, in the Ericaceae treatment than you do in the other two treatments. So it looks like that there's a lot of methane being oxidized in the surface horizons in the Ericaceae treatment. And the reverse is true, that if you look deeper, you see that there looks like a steeper slope to the right in the sedge-mediated, indicating sedge-mediated oxidation down deep in the peat. So we see this flip of where oxidation is happening in these treatments. And this shows methane concentration profiles, and you can see at least on the bottom one, which is our slightly lower water table treatment, we see a consistent sedge-mediated oxidation of peat showing up in terms of lower methane concentrations dropping rapidly in the bottom of the peat, and at least the combined treatment in the top as well. What we see here is the acetate, which is a substrate for methanogens. Under low water table treatments, there's clearly a big bump up in the Ericaceae treatments, both the unmanipulated and the pure Ericaceae, relative to the sedge treatment for many of the dates. Not as much in the low water table treatment in the first year. We started to see something in the second year. We do have third year data. I don't have it on here right now. Do have some of that as well. It seems more similar to this one here. So this means that the high water table, there is more substrate available, and certainly it looks like certainly low water and perhaps in high water under the Ericaceae. I have to push faster here. On DNA data show the basic focus on the top frame here. There's a plant functional group by depth interaction. In the 10 to 20 centimeter depth, methanogens are a larger fraction of the total sequence reads of our Marilumina sequencing in the Ericaceae and manipulated than in the sedge. And that trans with no difference in methanotrophs translates into a significantly higher Ericaceae and unmanipulated methanogen to methanotroph ratio. Just to keep going here, start looking at qPCR, the absolute reads, we see that the sedges have more bacterial abundance. So we have more bacterial abundance in the sedge treatment. The other two treatments have lower bacterial abundance and a lower methanotroph to methanogen ratio, all of which are feeding towards a greater methanogenesis. So in summary, we have lowered water table leading to lower methane fluxes as expected and increased oxidation consistent with our general understanding of how things work. Increased Ericaceae abundance is caused by lower water tables do lead to increased Ericaceae abundance in our study. So that would be consistent with pushing towards an Ericaceae dominated methane cycle. In the plant functional groups, we see increased redox potential under sedges, decreased peat acetate and methanogen substrate pools, increase in methane oxidation deeper in the peat, and decrease in methane oxidation shallower in the peat. Under Ericaceae, we saw that they were associated with increased methane flux, and this is actually kind of surprising, with or without sedges, decrease in methanotroph to methanogen ratios and a decreased bacterial activity. So it's possible that the Ericaceae are interfering with methanotroph function in surface peat more than methanogen function. And so we don't know what the mediation of this is, if it's by the ericoid mycorrhizas, by mediating nutrients or specific exudates, the chemistry of their exudates, et cetera. We hope to get a little deeper into that as we move here. This is a little different from what you might expect. And one thing to remember about this study that's a little different from other studies where, you know, microtopography suggests that you're going to get more methane out of the lower sites that tend to be more sedge-dominated is we controlled for microtopography initially and had the plant communities come in there, and we manipulated just them. Peat quality is the same starting here. So we're really looking at the community effect or the plant functional group effects. And I think that's why we might have a slight divergence from other studies. Oh, and Todd Antle, who's right there, is going to give a poster on Wednesday afternoon in the session listed right there on the board about roots in the system. So if you want to know more about how to study roots in peat, Todd's your man.